What does Thanksgiving have to do with the end of the world? Or maybe, what can Thanksgiving teach us to prepare us for the end of the world? Because see, I'm over here, and maybe you're with me, and the biggest thing on my mind right now is Thanksgiving. Because Thanksgiving is coming, and it's Thanksgiving week, and I don't know about you, but my schedule looks different this week. It's kind of more relaxed, and I'm excited about that. What's on my mind is Thanksgiving, and also that the Saints were beating the Eagles 24-7 at halftime. But mostly what's on my mind is Thanksgiving, and Jesus is over here talking about the end of the world. Can Thanksgiving teach us anything that prepares us for the end of the world? Well, to answer that question, we have to ask another question. What exactly is Jesus talking about? With the sun being blotted out and the moon being darkened, or maybe it's the other way around, and the stars falling from heaven. In the gospel today, Jesus is talking about two things. He is talking about the end of the world. And he's talking about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. What is that? What is this temple in Jerusalem? What is that all about? So when God rescued his people from slavery to Pharaoh in Egypt, you remember the story? Moses comes to Pharaoh. God says, let my people go. And then there's the plagues and all this and the Red Sea. And God rescues his people out of Egypt. And they go to this place called Mount Sinai. Moses goes to the mountain. God gives everybody the Ten Commandments. And God says, here's how you're supposed to pray. Here's how you're supposed to worship me. And there were all sorts of things in that law where God told his people how to worship him. And one of those things in that law was, they said, well, you'd come to Jerusalem. Eventually, we saw it was Jerusalem. And you would come to Jerusalem and you would offer stuff. You would offer incense to God. Sound familiar? You would offer, the priest would offer bread and wine to God. Does that sound familiar? And every day, they would offer animal sacrifice. They would take bulls or goats or lambs or oxen, depending on what the sacrifice was for, and they would bring them to this big bronze altar outside. It wasn't a little altar, like this was a big old thing. You like put, you know, animals and people on top. And they would go on the altar and they would slaughter these animals. They would pour their blood out, and the blood of the animals would go into these little drains in the side of the altar, and it would run down out the side of the temple and into the river. And it would mix with the water of the river and go out of the city. They would offer these sacrifices to be close to God. But Jesus came, and Jesus said, I've come to fulfill all of that. I have come not to abolish, but yeah, I've come to fulfill all of that sacrifice. I've come to show you what it means. And the book of Hebrews that we heard in the second reading, that we've been reading from in the Bible for a few weeks now, shows us that we don't need any more sacrifices of goats or of bulls or of lambs, because Jesus gave the perfect sacrifice. He said, there is no greater love than to lay down your life for your friends. It's not about sacrificing some dumb animal, but it's about choosing to give myself to serve you and to love you. And so Jesus comes and he offers the one sacrifice that takes away sin. and like the lambs in the temple would be slaughtered, their blood would pour out, and it would mix with the water of the river, of the Kidron River, going out of Jerusalem. So too, from Jesus' side, you remember? Flows out blood and water, in which we are washed and in which we are cleansed, and by which we get to not only sacrifice for other people, we get to not only offer ourselves to God, but we get to live in the joy of the resurrection. And now we don't offer bulls and goats and all of these things, but now we come to Mass and we offer on this altar our joys and our sorrows. We offer on this altar our desires and our choices. We offer on this altar our very selves. We get to be united with Him. We come and get to participate, not to crucify Jesus again, not to do this all over again, but beyond space and time, to enter into the sacrifice that takes away all of our sins, and we come and we say thank you. We come and we offer bread and we offer wine, and that bread and that wine is not merely a symbol, like the bread and the wine was back in the temple, but that bread and that wine become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. The bread and the wine becomes God because God says so, and we call that the Eucharist. And the Eucharist is a Greek word, and it means thanksgiving. And we come and we give thanksgiving to God at this altar, offering Him all of our joys and all of our tribulations. And so Jesus is telling the people, He's telling the Christians, He's telling His followers that, hey, this temple, not only is the sacrifice passing away, not only am I giving you a better sacrifice, not only am I giving you the Mass, but hey, within one generation, this temple is going to be destroyed. The whole thing about the sun and the moon and the stars falling from heaven, that's symbols of the temple being destroyed. In front of the Holy of Holies, the holiest place in the temple, there was this curtain which was meant to represent the sky. With the stars, it was meant to represent the heavens. And you remember what happened to that curtain when Jesus died on the cross? It was torn in two from top to bottom. Temple will be destroyed within one generation. And Jesus said in a little bit that we didn't read today, when that happens, you better get out of here. You better go and run and hide in the hills. And you know what happened? A generation in Jewish thinking is about 40 years. Jesus is saying this stuff at around 33 AD or so, and the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. 70 minus 30 is 40. One generation, the temple is destroyed. And you know what happened to Christians? You know what they did? They ran and went hide in the hills because they knew that Jesus was talking about the temple being destroyed. And so they went, and they went in the hills, and they archaeologists tell us that they had caves and tunnels that were connected to one another where they stayed and where they were protected until the tribulation was over, until they were able to come out. The temple was destroyed. Jerusalem was destroyed. 1 million Jews were dead. But they were saved by their obedience to the word of the Lord. But that was not the last of the trials of the Christians, was it? No, they came out of the caves, and the Christians in other places were faced with different struggles. And the big struggle was this: are you going to worship God or the emperor? Are you going to worship God or the emperor? All you got to do is get down on your knees and pray to the emperor. But that would be breaking the first commandment. And if you don't worship the emperor, but you worship God instead, if you're lucky, you're going to be beheaded. If you're not lucky, you're not a Roman citizen, maybe you'll be crucified. Or maybe you'll be fed to lions. Troubles will come. Are you going to worship God or the emperor? But that was not the last of the persecutions either, was it? Jesus is talking about the destruction of the temple, and Jesus is also talking about the end of the world. What does Thanksgiving have to do with trials? How can Thanksgiving help to prepare us for the trials at the end of the world? Or for the trials of, like, next week? I'd like to read you a quote that I wrote down and stuck in my Bible from the Catechism. Catechism of the Catholic Church. Church teaches this. Before Christ's second coming, the church must pass through a final trial. And that trial will shake the faith of many believers. The persecution will be a religious deception, offering men an apparent solution to their problems at the price of apostasy from the truth. What does that mean? The final trial is going to be, people are going to be offered something that looks like a solution to our problem, that looks like an easy fix for what's wrong. But the cost is that we're going to have to stand apart from God. That's what apostasy means. It means to stand apart. It means to abandon the truth. And the Catechism goes on. The supreme religious deception is that of the Antichrist. And 1 John in the Bible tells us that there are many antichrists. The one big, the antichrist at the end of time. But the first letter of St. John in the Bible tells us there are many antichrists. And the deception of the antichrist is where man glorifies himself in the place of God. Worship the emperor, a man, or worship God. We are not in that final trial. We could be tomorrow, or next week, or next year, or 1,000 years from now. I don't know when that's going to happen. In fact, nobody knows. I don't know. You don't know. The people on TV who say that they know, they don't know. Nobody knows, because Jesus said, nobody knows. But regardless of when the end of the world is going to happen, regardless of when the trial is going to be, I think some of those things might sound familiar. I've got to be the best at all costs. I'm not going to pray. I'm not going to be with my family. I'm not going to care for those whom I love. Because I'm always working to be the best. I'm going to put others down. Because I can only be the best if I step on top of them. And I'm going to insult people, and I'm going to gossip about people. I'm going to do anything I can. If I can't be the best, at least I'll look like the best. I'm going to care so much about my appearance that it distracts me from the good things in life, from the worship of God that really makes me happy. this deception offers to you and to me an apparent solution to our problems. That means it looks like a solution, but it actually only leads us deeper into problems. Because if I can go find just a bunch of beers or a bunch of wine or a bunch of whiskey or something else, well, maybe I can feel good for a night and escape my problems. And then get drunk, which is a mortal sin. Maybe if I'm just so stressed out and so worn out, I can go to those places on the internet and relieve that stress and commit perhaps a mortal sin. Apparent solutions which make us stand apart from God. None of us want those. Not really. What we want is to stand with God. What we want is to live the life of joy. What we want is to persevere through all those tribulations in our lives. If we have to live through the last one, the ones that we've already lived through, and whatever tribulations are going on right now are going to come this week. And this is what Thanksgiving has to do with the end of the world. If we are grateful, we will have moved a long way in being able to stand firm in our trials. Why? Because gratitude requires remembering. If I'm going to be thankful for something, I got to remember what I'm thankful for. I got to have the discipline to sit down and to think about it. And remembering fosters hope. Gratitude requires remembering, and remembering fosters hope. To say thank you for something, I got to think about what it is. And remembering fosters hope, what does that mean? Well, that means if I've got things to thank God for, that means God has done stuff in my life in the past. And if God has done stuff in my life in the past, that means it's reasonable to think that He will do stuff in my life in the present and in the future. If God has done stuff in my life in the past, then it is reasonable to expect that God will do stuff in my life now and in the future. And even if times in my past, we all have them, times in my past were hard, and times in my past were difficult, but I'm still here, and I'm okay. Even if it used to be difficult, and I'm okay now, but man, even if it's still difficult, God's taken me through. He's taken me through it so far. It's okay. And I can be more confident. I can have greater hope. Real hope. Hope founded on some facts. That God will be with me in the future. Gratitude requires remembering, and remembering fosters hope. And it is hope that keeps us through the trials. I'd like to read you a passage from, I think, my favorite chapter in the Bible, Sirach chapter 2. If you come forward to serve the Lord, prepare yourself for trials. Set your heart right and be steadfast. Trust in God and He will help you. Hope in Him and He will make your way straight. So if we want to persevere through the trials of the end of the world, should we live until that time? If we want to persevere through the trials of our own lives, let us be grateful so that we might remember, and let us remember so that we might have hope. And how can we do that? I have one suggestion. What if every day this week, you and I would take the time to thank God for something? Doesn't have to be a big thing, but one thing every day. Perhaps that would be the best way for us to celebrate Thanksgiving. That gratitude might help us to remember, and that remembering, we might have hope.